you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Nick Cavanaro from Reach NYC, and you're listening to The Great Talking Metal.
Hey, I'm Renee Mata from Reach NYC, and you are listening to Talking Metal, motherfucker.
All right, guys, this is episode 921 of the Talking Metal podcast. At some point in the episode, I may say it's episode 920. I can't remember because I did that little bonus podcast as 920. This was originally supposed to be 920. I just didn't have it edited together in time. So it's actually 921. Our guest, Nick and Renee from the band Reach NYC. And also, for the first time ever, my mom is on the podcast, also my brother. So stay tuned for that. A big shout out to all the patrons who help us make this show possible. Like our brand new guy, Dane Damage. Thank you so much, dude. We cannot thank you enough. And your large t-shirt, Talking Metal t-shirt, since you are pledging $5 a month, will be mailed to you shortly. And anyone else out there who wants to pledge $5 a month, I will immediately mail you out a Talking Metal t-shirt. Of course, you're also going to get bonus content on Patreon, including our weekly podcast. So yeah, big thanks to you, Dane, and also a thanks to everyone else who joins us on Patreon, like Madison Hatter, Seth B., Alan Janssen, Hank Reeves, John Simpson, Huckney Jacobson, John Barron, Ed Ferguson, Denny Striegel, Patrick Sabin, Jerry from Salt Lake City, Blue Walsh 21, Victor Guzman, Glenn Watson, who was the guy who wanted the Alan Tecchio interview. Thank you, Glenn, for reconnecting me with my friend Alan Tecchio. Joey Van Cherry, Gene Eugene DX, Sean Richmond, Mario Charance, Andrew Miller from Canada, Jeremy Weltman, Chris Riley, Johan Erdestrom, Steven Rodriguez, Tommy Anderson, Gregory Muse, Kenny McCrimmon, Leo from Alaska, Brad from Utah, and of course, Yarg Metal, Dan Gurwan. A big shout out to my man, Victor Ruiz, who does some of the bonus material with me on Patreon. Jerry from Long Island, Sam Soupy, Drake, Matt Carroll, Joe Ryan, Jason Seth, Steven Saylor, Ron Keel, Jean-Francois Blah, Anthony Mackey, James Bennett, David Gray, Fred Roots, Michael Street, Mike Jones, Steve Hoker, John Bouvary, and our longest running patron ever at this point, Metal Dan. Thanks to you, Metal Dan. You rock at $10 a month. Wow. Cannot thank you enough, Metal Dan. Let's get into the episode right now. This is Talking Metal, episode 921, possibly referred to as 920. All right. Before we get into the episode, one last thing. Drink Dash Vodka. It is the best vodka out there. I love this stuff. Dash Vodka. Big Talking Metal toast. Little Dash. All right. That's delicious. Let's get into the episode.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we are kind of having a unique show this week because I'm not home. I'm on my Zoom microphone, not to be confused with Zoom, the thing that everyone uses in this COVID world to connect with one another. But this is my Zoom recorder, the H5 handy recorder, and I am down at my mom's. We are camped out down here for 4 days, the whole family, two kids, Emily and myself, the two dogs, my mom's brand new place. It's just a hectic time. I won't go into the details, but our house is on the market and we had to vacate our house for a while. So that's what I'm doing here today, just hanging with you guys. The format is a little off, but here's my guest for today. We have a great band, by the way, called Reach NYC. We're going to talk with Renee and Nick from that band, and that's going to end today's show, okay? And we're also going to interview my mom. In-person interview. I love in-person interviews. And my brother, who lives not far from where my mom lives. He and his wife and his kids came over a couple times while we were down there. So it was great to hang with him. But we shared some memories that we're going to share with you guys. So it's a very personal show for me, literally. I mean, we have my family on the show with me. And you'll just get a little bit of a look inside my life. You know, if anything, if you're interested in who I am, you might learn something about that today. You might not. You'll also hear some great discussion on rock music from my brother, and I really get into some great discussion about bands, and my mom shares some great insight too. So I hope you enjoy this kind of different episode of Talking Metal today. And as always, thank you for your support. Thanks to everyone on Patreon. We're going to do another classic album segment, kind of the classic album book club segment with the patrons of Patreon, where we all get together to talk about one of our favorite records. It's going to be Holy Diver by Dio. Okay, so stay tuned for that. But I did want to mention John Schaefer of Iced Earth. Big news this week is he is going to turn and I guess rat out some of his fellow Oath Keepers. Victor and I spoke about this on the recent Mark Striegel podcast, which is the Patreon only podcast. But the thing that no one's picked up on is in the front page New York Times article about this was it. The article ends with saying that John Schaefer will most likely go into witness protection after this, the witness protection program. So we're never going to hear from this guy again. You know, whether he does jail time after becoming an informant is debatable. He still might have to do some time. I kind of doubt it, because if he goes into witness protection, you know, even in jail, there's not a witness protection. So I thought that was such a big story, and it doesn't seem like anybody's picked up on it. John Schaefer of Iced Earth mentioned in the New York Times, and they do briefly say that he is also known for his work with the heavy metal band Iced Earth. So there you go. Probably the only time Iced Earth has ever been mentioned in the New York Times. And yeah, I guess we can say goodbye to him, because he will more than likely be taking on a new identity and a new life. Kind of like, you know, what is this? Better Call Saul, where Saul Goodman, is that his name? I can't remember. Goes in, I'm talking about the Breaking Bad lawyer and the Better Call Saul guy, goes into a witness protection program and is like sweeping up at a Krispy Kreme, right? At the beginning, I believe, of that. It's either the beginning of Better Call Saul or the end of Breaking Bad. I think it's the beginning of Better Call Saul. So there you go. John Schaefer, goodbye, and we will not see you again, it doesn't sound like. Although we may continue to hear about your informing over the next few months. I could see you being in the news for at least a few more months before you disappear forever into witness protection. And there you go. So what else did I see in the news off the top of my head? It's nothing that I can remember. A lot of people getting their vaccines, guys. Rob Halford, Paul Stanley, Tracy Guns. We all got to get our vaccines so we can get back to having live concerts. I have been vaccinated, had my second vaccine on February 4th, so it's been a while. I'm ready to rock, guys. Please join me. Let's do this together. Man, I had no reaction basically off the first shot and the second shot. Yeah, I was a little tired and had the chills for literally like 2 or 3 hours, and then I was fine. And I mean, it wasn't even that big of a discomfort. So if you're not going to have any issues. You know, I know there's been some extreme cases, like one out of every million people who get it have gotten severely sick and one person died and all this stuff. That's not going to happen to you guys. There's a better chance you're going to get in a car accident and get killed going to the grocery store than you are getting the vaccine. And there's a way bigger chance that if you don't get the vaccine, you're going to get COVID and get really sick or even die. So just get the vaccine, guys. Let's open this world back up. Let's rock together again. And if there's anti-vaxxers out there listening, listen, I'd like to say I respect your opinion, but I don't. We all need to do this together. This is absolutely not a political issue whatsoever. This is an issue that's going to give us all freedom. The true freedom is going to be getting the vaccine, because that gives you freedom again. If you don't want to get the vaccine, sure. Are you free to go out and do whatever you want? Well, depending on what state you're in, sure, or what country you're in, sure, but you're not free from getting COVID or spreading it to somebody else, killing a loved one because you spread it to somebody else. I'll shut up. Just get the vaccine, guys. Come on. Freedom is what awaits you once you get the vaccine, in my opinion. All right, so this is my mom, and let's talk with her right now. Hey, so we're doing something a little bit different today. We're kind of going in a different format direction, and that is because we, the Striegels, Emily, our two sons, our two dogs, we had to vacate our house for a number of days, and we've actually been staying in my mom's new house here in Central Jersey. And for the first time ever, I believe, after 920 episodes, I wanted to bring my mom on the show to talk just a little bit about her relationship with heavy metal music and hard rock music, because we were just talking earlier and she was talking about Ozzy's Boneyard on Sirius, but when we'll get there. But before we do that, Mom, what are some of your earliest memories of your son, me, liking more louder rock? And let's talk about that, because it's a band like Kiss in the 70s. They were a little out there, you know, they were compared to what maybe you were used to or anyone was used to at that time. So what do you remember about me taking a liking to rock music in general?
Well, basically, I remember that I drove you to high school every morning in Hinsdale, Illinois, where right. we lived when you were in high school. And as we drove, it was only about a 5-minute drive probably, but we always had heavy metal playing on the radio.
Right.
And you would coach me about who the bands were and how to recognize them. And I got pretty good. I could definitely tell AC/DC from Van Halen. And,
right.
You know, you would quiz me even about, okay, you know, what band is this? And when I hear that high pitch kind of screaming, kind of singing, I'd say, oh, AC/DC.
Right. You were able to identify it. But even going back, that was high school. So that was the 80s. Going back to when I was a younger kid, I have memories of listening to your Beatles records before I was even into Kiss, and like miming in the living room there to the Beatles and liking some of the more aggressive songs. Do you remember that at all?
I can't say that I do remember that. I don't remember you.
What about Kiss, like as a kid? When
well,
do you?
Well, of course, I remember. You know, that was a big passion of yours. And yeah, I remember that the makeup and the costumes and everything. Yeah.
And you thought
really
they were
outrageous.
A little goofy?
Yeah.
You, yeah.
Yeah. Outrageous.
Were you, because I always felt like I was asking you to buy me Kiss records and you didn't want to. And I remember getting other records like Sean Cassidy and the Village People and say, well, try this. Maybe this is more your style. And even a Blood, Sweat, and Tears record and stuff, which I liked. I liked that music, but I felt like you were resistant to Kiss for an 8-year-old.
Do you remember that or not?
I don't really remember that, you know. And
then at some point you gave in, I feel like.
I guess, because, I mean, like right now when Kiss comes on the radio, when I happen to have on a station that carries that kind of music, you know. Yeah, I like listening to it, actually, right. You know. I want to rock and roll all night, party every day. Right.
So we will get to what you told me earlier about listening to Ozzy's Boneyard on Sirius, but you took me to my very first heavy metal concert. It was Heavy Penton, followed by Saxon, followed by Motley Crue. A very long night, I would think, because we were there for all three of those bands. And I remember after it was over, you thought Saxon was actually the best out of the three. I remember you telling, which I think what happened, the way I remember, by the time Saxon was done and Motley came on, the energy level of the crowd went down because they were so exhausted from two bands already. But what do you remember about that show?
The main thing I remember is that like when we went in and gave our tickets to the ticket taker, he said some snide comment to me, right, about, oh, mom's heading out to the, you know, concert with the kids tonight, you, yeah, know. He pegged me right away as mom, even though I thought I was being real cool in my jeans and everything, yeah, being there, you know. So that didn't set really well with me. But then we got to our...
And how old were you at this point? Because you were like... Were you even 40? I'm trying to think. You were probably in your late
30s.
How
old were you?
I was 14. Yeah, because it was 1984.
14, I'm 24, 34. I was 36.
Right, right. Which is wild for us hard rock and heavy metal people to think, because a lot of the people, we do have some younger listeners who we value a lot, but a lot of us guys are in our late 40s and all the way through our late 50s who listen to this podcast now. So it's kind of interesting to think that you are even way younger than we are now,
right,
and
right,
they pegged you as mom.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But then when we got to our seats, I don't know if you remember, but I was really interested to see that there was like a guy who I thought was probably in his 50s sitting like in the row ahead of us. I think we were kind of in a balcony thing,
right,
looking,
yes,
down.
It was general admission, but we wandered around and found,
yeah,
some seats in the balcony.
And he was totally rocking out, you know, he was like so into it. And, you know, just totally with the music and, you know.
Probably on drugs, possibly. But
maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I thought, oh, wow, he's so much older than me, you know.
Right.
And, you know, so, yeah, I shouldn't feel bad about being here, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was in those times, and we've spoken about this on the podcast before, that those bands like Motley Crue and Iron Maiden, it was primarily youth that followed these bands. There weren't a lot of people in their 20s. I mean, you cited this one guy, but in general, this was a kid's thing, you know, and that's something we lose sight of now when we go to concerts and everyone's, you know, fat and bald and, you know, old like we are. But it's not that anyone in this room is fat and bald.
Thank you.
But yeah, so it is interesting, but you never went to any, I think that was it, right? You didn't really go to any other concerts. You would drop us off,
right,
at some.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. So I can remember taking you and picking you up at other concerts. But yeah, I think that was the only one I actually attended with you that, you know, qualified as like heavy metal, you know?
Right.
And of course, you know, it's given me bragging rights over all these years, you know, to occasionally tell people, you know, that, yeah, I saw Motley Crue live in concert.
Yeah, in a theater, nonetheless, before they were really famous. I mean, they were starting to get famous at that,
yeah,
point. But nowadays, like as in your younger days, you weren't really a big fan of this. You wouldn't seek it out and listen to this style of music. But nowadays, you've actually found yourself turning on like Ozzy's Boneyard when you're alone in your car. Ozzy's Boneyard, of course, if you guys don't know, which I'm sure most of you do, maybe some of the international listeners don't know, is a station on Sirius that plays basically hard rock from the 70s and 80s, and you actually have found yourself listening to that station and enjoying it.
Yeah, that's true. I actually, sometimes when I had come up to stay with your kids and then was driving home late at night in order to help myself stay awake and alert behind the wheel, I would turn on, you know, some really loud music. Right. So Ozzy's Boneyard fit the bill. And yeah, I remember recently I had had it on the night before, and then the following day it was still set to that station, and I was going to give a ride to someone else in my car and she got in the car and that music started, and she was like totally in shock that I was listening to heavy metal. So so, but I mean, yeah, it keeps you awake when you need to stay alert behind the wheel. But you know, I like the tunes.
And you said you like earlier, you said they have hooks and memorable
melodies. Right. So, you know, I always like Sammy Hagar and, Van Halen and, you know, especially, and so it's good stuff.
Well, I remember you and Dad picking my friend Terry and I up from the Sammy Hagar concert at the, I believe that was at the Chicago Pavilion. And Sammy, unlike most bands who ended at midnight, I remember him on stage saying, "Well, we get charged a fine if we play past 11, but we're going to play as long as we want." And I remember we got to the car at like 12:15, and you guys were not happy that it had gone so late, but that was my you got over
it. I don't remember that one. Yeah. So, sorry.
Yeah, Crocus had opened that show. Crocus and Sammy Hagar. But okay, guys. Well, I want to thank my mom for finally checking in here on episode 920 of the Talking Metal podcast. And thank you for letting us stay at your house these last few days as we try to put our house on the market and sell
it. You're very welcome. And yeah, it's a privilege and an honor to be on the podcast.
Thanks, Mom.
Thanks, Mark. Okay,
bye.
Love you.
Love you. All right, Jackie Striegel, my mom, great to hang with her, and a big thanks to her for letting us stay at her place for a number of days. And what we're going to do right now is we're going to get into my chat with my brother, Mike Striegel. Everyone check out his Instagram, which we're going to link through the show notes, his video production company's Instagram. He needs some followers, definitely, so check him out. And right after we talk with my brother, we will speak with my friend Nick Cavanero and also Renee from the band Reach NYC. Here we go. Hey, I'm continuing my family interviews here, and we had my mom on earlier. Now we are still at my mom's. It's actually the next day, and my brother is here, who is 4 years younger than me. And Mike, I wanted to tell you there's a new cool store around the corner called Rock and Roll Art Revival. You got to go check it out.
Okay.
You guys should all follow them on Instagram. I'll put up their link in the show notes. And they have all this high-end, cool, like rock and roll art, you know, posters, concert posters. And then they also have vinyl albums, books, jewelry, all sorts of stuff. A very cool store that everyone in New Jersey that everyone should check out. And we will put up their Instagram in today's show notes. Rock and Roll Art Revival. Emily and I were both there. I was there twice this past weekend. Just great stuff. So Mike, let's go back to when we were kids. What are some of your earliest rock memories?
I think, thanks first of all for having me on.
Sure.
I appreciate this. This is cool. A lot of rock memories. So I'll go back to the earliest memories I have. And, you know, I would have to say it was growing up in Morristown, New Jersey, and I couldn't have been more than 3 or 4 years old. And we were obviously at that age, you know, in the late 70s, very much into Kiss. Right. And still am totally into Kiss as well, as I know people listening know you are, but I am as well. And I would have to say being turned on to the excitement and the energy and the theatrics and, of course, these super, you know, godlike personas of them, you know, all four members was some of the earliest memories I have. And getting my first album, which was actually Dressed to Kill. I remember getting this album.
You got that before the Ace Frehley solo record?
Well, I believe I got them both around the same time.
Yeah, okay.
And I seem to have a very clear memory. It was probably around, again, fourth or fifth birthday that I got Dressed to Kill and an Ace Frehley doll.
Right, I
remember the original Kiss dolls.
And we actually tried to chip some of the makeup off
to see what
doll
Ace really looked like.
Yeah, because at that time, no one knew what Kiss looked like. It was a very secret thing.
We thought that getting the makeup off the doll would reveal his true identity.
We would have an in on what Ace looked like. But back in those days, I remember even going around, you know, and we'd be at the mall and we'd be like, hey, that might be Gene Simmons over there. Yeah. And there
they're
was
from
such,
New York.
There was such a mystery. Yeah.
Being in the suburbs of New York City, you know, we always thought that we might catch a glimpse of them and not even know it. Could have been them walking down the street. So yeah, that's some of my earliest memories. And we would also have Kiss concerts in your bedroom. It was always in your bedroom. You had the stereo, I believe, in your room.
Yes, and some really cool psychedelic shag carpeting.
Yes.
Which was left over from the people before us. Yeah.
Yeah, and that worked to our advantage because it definitely enhanced our concert vision that we had in our little, you know, boy minds at that time. And we would use the our Matchbox tracks.
Yeah, they were actually Hot Wheel tracks.
The
orange Hot Wheel tracks. If you guys, I'm sure maybe a few of you know what we're talking about, but they were these just, you know, they would fit to the size of the Hot Wheel and you could race them down these orange tracks. But we'd use a strip of the track as a guitar, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, who knew when we got these Hot Wheel tracks, you know, that we were going to, in fact, you know, they would second as guitars for us as we shredded along to. So, hey, we might have started the whole air guitar thing.
And you told me the other day we were talking about this and you said that I was very controlling over what characters and how you had to play.
Insisted on being Gene and Paul. Because there was just the two of us. So we would alternate our roles. And depending on the song that was playing and who had the vocals, you know. But you being that at that point, all the vocals were Gene and Paul. You were singing.
Well, Peter had some of the vocals.
That's true. He had a couple songs. But anyway, so yeah, I was always Ace and Peter, which I didn't mind at all. If I was not playing it, quote unquote, playing it right on the Hot Wheels track, you would, you know, give me constructive criticism and feedback right away. That's not how he plays. And make sure you go down on your knees because when he's playing the solo, that's what Ace does. So you gotta really get into it. And then we'd flash on and off the lights to make it like our pyrotechnics as best we could. That was a lot of fun.
Crazy memories. And it's so interesting because I don't think we were alone in our experience where Kiss was this bridge between, you know, Spider-Man and Superman and rock and roll.
Right on.
Because of what they did. And I think back, you know, Alice Cooper, I didn't get into Alice Cooper until really the 80s after the fact, you know, and then I went back and discovered how great he was.
Yeah.
In the late 70s, Alice wasn't quite as popular. I feel like he kind of dropped off after like Welcome to My Nightmare 75, right? Maybe he was still going like 77, but by the 78, 79, his popularity had definitely waned, and I didn't know anything about Alice Cooper in those times. And when you think about it, in some weird way, I mean, sure, Gene Simmons was spitting blood, and the Kiss still at that time, I know in today's times, they might look almost, you know, to some people, they're not scary at all, but there was still like a danger about them at that time. But unlike Alice, like they weren't cutting off people's heads. They didn't take it quite to the theatrical extreme that he did. And I almost wonder if that made it even better for little kids to get into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were dangerous, but they weren't quite as dangerous as, you know, even, you know, the Stones or something, where they're like, you know, these doing drugs and, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah, we didn't know what anything about that.
Yeah.
You know,
it was still, there was always, it was always packaged. There was a safety to it that yeah, it worked. They could have the Kiss remote control van and the Kiss dolls and the toys and the
comic books, yeah. everything, you know, and again,
color forms. Remember those?
Yeah, of course.
Kiss color forms.
We had those too, but just bridging that gap between, you know, the fantasy, sci-fi and rock, you know, just masterfully brought it all together for kids of the 70s. Nothing like it. But yeah, Alice, I didn't either get into Alice until, you know, I guess that was probably 86. Correct me if I'm wrong, where Constrictor came out.
Right.
And then I was like, well, who is this guy? And I was not a lot older, but fairly older, seven years older than I was in that period we just discussed in the late 70s, rocking out with our Hot Wheels tracks. But I feel like Alice was something that at that point, who seemed a little more mature, to your point, with like his theatrics were right. A little, like, you know, again, cutting his head off and all that. Like, suddenly he had gone through that dark period of the early 80s, but then came back. I mean, he's back.
Right.
Was the single off Constrictor that caught my attention.
Right.
You know, for, I don't know, Friday the 13th part. I don't even know what.
The song I remember getting me into Alice was Teenage Frankenstein.
Off of that album.
Yeah.
Yeah. As well. Yep.
Yeah.
And I think that I actually bought that cassette tape, and I'm sure at that point you highly recommended it.
Right.
And you would always say too, hey, I think you should buy this album.
Yeah, because I knew if you bought it, I'd get to listen to it.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's another, I mean, I could go on about Alice because I love Alice and everything that he is and represents, but there's another Alice memory and the cassette tape memory that I have with you as well, and that was you were going to school in Boston,
right?
Away at college,
yes.
Berkeley, and you sent me for my birthday an Alice Cooper cassette tape.
Right. Okay.
Raise Your Fist and Yell.
Right.
And it had just been released, and you were very thoughtful to send me this and send it down to, you know, my house in Jersey.
I have a feeling I know what you're going to say.
Parents' house in Jersey at the time. And you mailed it from Boston. I thought, wow, that's cool. Mark remembered my birthday and sent me this tape.
Right.
And I opened the package.
Yeah.
Very excitedly. And the tape was already open. And the letter inside that you wrote, handwrote, said, hey, Mike, happy birthday. I hope you don't mind. I opened this tape and gave it a listen. It's really good.
Right.
Enjoy. Happy
birthday. Well, I taped it. That was the thing.
I had
dual-to-dual cassettes.
Fine. I don't mind.
And I remember I had taped it before I sent it to you, which, you know, was a whole way that, you know, we would exchange music back in the day, taping your friends' records and stuff like that. But we could go on about Alice for a long time. But yeah, it was interesting that I really felt he was absent from radio, absent from public eye for, you know, through the late 70s, through the mid 80s. It was, you know, and then he really made a comeback.
He did. And I just watched, ironically enough, the Muppets episode with Alice Cooper on it. And he's
what
great.
What year was that?
I don't know. It had to be 70. I think it might have been a year or two later, 78, maybe 79.
Okay.
But he's great, of course, in it. And I think the album after Welcome to My Nightmare was From the Inside.
Okay.
And we might need to check that out, but I'm pretty sure it was From the Inside. And I don't think that album resonated as well with, you know, after such a huge album like Welcome to My Nightmare. But
right.
I love it. Nurse Rosetta, there's so many great songs on there. But he played a song, and I forget what like his main single was from that, but it was really like almost like a, you know, in the likes of like a Helen Reddy, you know, Neil Diamond kind of esque vibe of that. You know, and I don't know if it was From the Inside or Go to Alice Cooper Goes to Hell, what came out next. But anyways, he played a song.
That's a great record. I love that record.
From the Inside.
Yeah.
Listen, I love every Alice album has something to offer. So
the Muppet Show, I mean, we won't get into this, but we watched, it's up on Disney now,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We watched some of those completely impolitically correct.
Yeah.
And like just the way that they were talking about like sexual innuendos
yeah, everywhere.
And
there's warnings, you know, even like, you know, it says this show may depict tobacco use. It's like, right. It's the Muppets. Like, yeah. What are we, seriously?
Yeah.
What?
There was one, we were watching an episode with Sandy Duncan. It was real racy, man. I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow. And yeah, that's a whole nother conversation just about how we've completely gone off the rails with yes. our political correctness.
Agreed.
And that the Muppet shows isn't even politically correct nowadays. But back to rock, I did yes. want to actually talk to you about more of the 80s metal stuff. But I do want to give you a big shout out because you've helped through the years with a lot of our videos behind the scenes yeah. with Talking Metal. So you have been involved with Talking Metal. There's been many videos that you've worked on for us. I know the one, if you guys haven't seen it, with John Astronomy and Damon Johnson, Mike edited that all together, them talking about guitars. That's a great watch. And more recently, the Paul Stanley interview, you put that together in the intro and did the editing on that, which turned out great. Did really well for us.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, you bet. So let's talk about the, actually, before we go there, what is your video company? Now, let's give that a plug and we'll link the Instagram through the show notes today.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's called Film at 11 Productions. And, you know, just getting it off the ground and starting off here. So I'm actually working on some other projects local to the area I live in Bucks County, Pennsylvania right now. But you can see all that if you go to the Instagram. Film at 11 Productions is the handle. Instagram only at this point. Just starting off there. But again, very much in the infancy stages of launching it. And yeah, I'm excited for what comes all out right. of that and what's ahead.
Good luck with that, definitely. And you definitely have a lot of talent as an editor and a great eye with the graphics and everything. So if anyone needs any video help, I mean, everything is virtual nowadays and very easy to get you some video files to work with. So definitely check Mike out. You can also reach out to me directly and I can hook you up with Mike's contact info. I'm trying to think now. We've been to a number of concerts together through the years, but I wouldn't say a ton, really.
Well, I think we could always go to more for sure.
And we will. But
yeah, I think Monsters of Rock.
I mean, because when I was in high school, you were still a little young to be going to shows.
Yeah,
and then I mean, we're 4 years apart, and then I remember going to Monsters of Rock. Now I'm not sure what year that would have been. If that was the summer of 88, sound right?
88. Yeah. I'm pretty sure 88.
Yeah. So that was Kingdom Come, followed by Metallica, I believe, then followed by Dokken, then Scorpions, then Van Halen. That was a great night. I remember, I believe my memories of this were we drove to Philadelphia. We were living in central Jersey. And we brought our neighbor with us.
Vito Cassano.
Yeah, Vito Cassano.
Owns Vito's Pizza in Penn.
You were friends with the two boys. Yeah, Vito and Vince Cassano. And what is he up to nowadays?
They own the pizza place in Pennington, New Jersey, Vito's Pizza. And Vito still run the business there. And also their sister, Ann Cassano.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And Vince and
Vito. Yeah, you were friends
with
all.
And Vito came with us.
Yeah.
And it was really just mind-blowing. I mean, I was younger than Vito, so I went with Vito, 2 years younger than Vito, and you 4 years older. So I was the youngest in our little, you know, trifecta going down to Philadelphia. JFK, no longer there.
JFK Stadium.
Rest in peace. But a lot of history in that stadium, for sure, from Live Aid and... So Monsters of Rock, it was a terrifyingly great experience for me. Again, being as young as I was and in this, I mean, I don't know. How many people do you think were in attendance? It seemed like...
Well, it was like general admission, so there had to be, I don't know. It could have been 25,000. It could have been 40.
It seemed like an insane amount of people for me. Again, this
I
being
would say
first
closer
concert,
to 25, maybe less. Who knows?
Going, we were on the floor and we worked our way.
Here's what I remember: we're parking the car and it was a mob scene getting in there, and Kingdom Come was playing.
Yep.
And I was bummed out because I wanted to hear them play Get It On. And I remember hearing it as we were outside and them ending. And I couldn't believe, oh, man, we missed Kingdom Come. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember you being bummed about that. But we got in, and then it was just to work our way through the crowd. And I mean, again, being like in eighth grade at the time and the smell of stale beer and cigarettes and weed was just everywhere. And we worked our way up again. You were leading us, you know, the three of us through the crowd and just worked our way. And we seemed so close to the stage.
For Metallica?
Yeah. And Metallica comes on, just tearing the stage apart. And I remember
This got to be at like 12 noon or something.
Yeah,
it was like early in the day. It could have been later than that, but it was definitely earlier in the day.
So as we're watching this, I don't know what song was playing, but suddenly a mosh pit formed.
Right.
Right. Like we're in the middle of it and the crowd just like, you know, and for anybody who's ever experienced.
Was this your first concert?
Yeah. Yeah. Mosh pit. We were caught in a mosh for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and
what a way to start things off.
And so the crowd.
For like, your concert experience.
The crowd formed this circle. We're in the middle. And I was like, holy, what are we doing? And we moved to the side and everybody started going crazy and it was just amazing. Regretfully, I did not jump into that mosh, but everything happens for a reason.
And then do you remember as Metallica played? So guys, again, we are at this. I mean, Metallica didn't play for more than an hour, maybe a little more. I don't know. But and Justice for All was not out yet. I remember they did play one song off the upcoming record, which was, I believe, Harvester of Sorrow. But during their set, and again, this is Mike's first time ever at a concert.
I know what you're
going to say. A guy with like a buff looking dude.
Buff. He was like huge, like gnarly looking guy. Bald head, like tattoos on his head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He came through and he had a knife out.
Yep.
Yeah,
big buck knife. And he's just holding it above his head.
Yeah. And the crowd cleared pretty quickly for him.
Yeah. Yeah. That might have been before the mosh pit started. Yeah. But definitely the same. Yeah.
This guy wanted to get up front and he looked like, you know, like a ex-Marine or current, I mean, younger guy though, but you know, looked hardcore guy. Like no one was going to mess with him.
He'd seen some things.
Yeah. And just walking, but not an older guy from what I remember, but just walking through the crowd with this massive knife out.
Yeah.
And I mean, the fact that he got in with this knife, I mean, because this wasn't a little tiny knife. This was a big, big knife.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just cleared, it was like, you know, cleared the crowd walking through like the
parting the seas.
Yeah, parting the seas like Jesus. Yeah, and just walking through the or was that Moses? I'm not sure.
Yeah, Moses parted the seas, yeah.
And just walking through the crowd. So unbelievable. Then Dokken came on and I remember the energy level went way down for Dokken.
Yeah.
I was happy to see them and loved Dokken.
You were always a big Dokken fan.
Oh yeah, for sure. But Scorpions, then I remember being great.
Scorpions.
I remember they played while the sun was still up, but I think by the time they were done,
it was set
done,
for
was,
sure. While they were
and
on.
I do remember Van Halen doing a great set, and even Sammy, I do remember him saying, you know, because at this point Eddie was who knows what he was on at this point or what was going on with Eddie, but the rumors were kind of out that you know. Eddie wasn't always having a good show every night. I think he may have been drinking and drugging a little bit much at that time, or it was catching up to him. But I remember Sammy after Eddie's solo stop and saying, "Man, that's the best he's played, you know, all tour. You guys are in for a treat tonight." And he was on fire that night. Sounded so good, and so great. And I feel like they didn't play many Roth era songs, like just a handful, like Panama and Did they do Jump? I can't even remember if they did Jump.
I don't recall Jump. Yeah. I recall Panama, though. And, of course,
And You Really Got Me. They did You Really Got Me.
And from,
Ain't Talking About Love, I think they did. Yeah, but yeah.
And from Hagar's era, you know, they did Only One Way to Rock. I think they opened the set with
that. Yeah, they did that, and I believe they did, I Can't Drive 55, I think.
And
they may have done also Heavy Metal, the song. off the heavy metal we'll soundtrack.
Have to dig out, we'll have to check out the set list online, see if we can find that.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I may be mistaken. Time. I don't have my phone on me or I could do it right now. But so that was a great memory.
Yep.
Then, you know, we've been going a while here, so I do need to wrap it up, Mike. But, of course, we saw Kiss together in the reunion tour and the Unplugged. And
yeah.
Well, lots here's, of stories.
Yeah, real quick. I know we're going, you know, long here, but I just ran into a girl at Starbucks, must have been maybe 12 right. or 13 years old. And, you know, I'm ordering my drink at the counter and I look down, she's waiting to pick up her drink and she has a Kiss shirt on.
Right. Okay.
You know, and I thought, oh, that's so cool. This is, you know, wow. Young girl, you know, so I ordered my drink and then I went down to wait near her, where she was waiting for her drink. And I was like, oh, I like your shirt. And she was like, oh, thanks. And, I was like, you know, I'm a big Kiss fan. And she was like, oh, that's cool. I was like, yeah, you know, it was just the anniversary of them announcing their reunion tour on the USS Intrepid. It happened April 14th, 1996.
Nerd alert.
Yeah, Conan O'Brien, you know, introduced the band. They were back right. together, the four original members. And she was looking at me like I was some nuts. Crazy yeah. old man. Yeah. I got the cue and I was like, well, I could geek out on Kistery with you, but I, you know, I just wanted to say nice shirt. That's awesome.
Right.
I kind of yeah. backed away gracefully.
Right
but
on.
Yeah, it's cool that, you know, Kiss is still going strong. And yeah, we saw many shows. I mean, I think of AC/DC, my first AC/DC
oh,
show.
Oh, okay,
was with
yeah.
you.
Yeah. That would have had to be shortly after the Monsters of Rock thing.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely, God, I don't know if that would have been the second or third time I saw AC/DC. Trying to think. I guess maybe that was the second. I always felt like AC/DC, no disrespect to them, because they are the greatest, but every time I saw them was a little not as good as the previous time.
Is that right?
Yeah, which I just, and maybe it's just because that memory of seeing them in 1985 on the Fly on the Wall tour mm-hmm. was just so intense and just, the energy level just so crazy. I just always felt each time I saw AC/DC, which has been many times through the years, the energy level went down slightly from time to time, which makes sense. They're getting older. Yeah.
And I think, you know, even then, you know, as young as they still were then, they had been doing it for so long. And I think that, I mean, just watching some of that old footage of Angus, you know, in this day and age, what he was putting into those shows and to be doing it night after night for years
right.
on end, you know.
Well, when I saw them, yeah, if you go back and watch, like, I think it's one of Bon Scott's, like, last concerts or at least last tour with him, that Live in Paris from, like, 79. I mean, he is on fire. That's a great watch if you haven't seen it in a while. I don't
is
know where you can
where
see it.
Is that the pants rip, like, in the middle?
I think so,
concert,
possibly.
And they're so good. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's just going crazy, his energy level. But that, when I saw them 5-6 years later, he was still at that energy level. But then by the late 80s, it started to go down just a little bit. But
yeah, still amazing. I mean,
yeah. And I saw them, I guess the last time I saw them was that weird last tour they did with Axl Rose. And that
sure.
was really wild.
That's cool.
Because
you got to see that.
Yeah, Axl came out. And he was, you know, Axl, everyone's like, oh, his ego's out of control. He's such a, and he was just this like humble guy.
That's amazing.
Standing kind of to Angus's side, uh-huh. you know, and just to see this guy who, let's face it, in some ways has a big ego and, you know, has had some crazy demands in the past and,
yeah.
you know, tweaked Chinese Democracy for X many years before releasing it. It was just really cool to see him, just this humble guy. And he did a great job. He delivered really great. And it was, I thought a really unique rock and roll experience to see that. But
yeah.
AC/DC, great band, one of my favorites
yep,
for sure.
Absolutely. But yeah, the list goes on and on of concerts that we've seen, but certainly would love to see many, many more as we get back to some sense of normalcy, hopefully, in the next year or so here.
Absolutely. Well, we do have to wrap it up, Mike, and we're going to get right into an interview right now with a band called Reach NYC. So give it a listen if you can. And I did tell Nick that we were going to meet up for an in-person interview to kind of make up for the lousy quality on this. So I hope to do that with him sooner than later. And here we go to take us out, Reach NYC. And I'll come back and check in with you guys after that. Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and on the line we have Rene Mata and Nick Cavanaro of the band Reach NYC. How are you guys?
Hey, what's going on?
Pretty good. What's going on, Mark?
Not much. Thanks for joining me. I want to talk about these great new songs that I've heard off of the upcoming EP by Reach NYC. But before we do that, Nick, just want to say this whole COVID thing was such a bizarre time in all of our lives. And I keep replaying one of the last things I did before whatever you want to call it, quarantine or lockdown, was I went to a diner, man. In West Orange, New Jersey, and we had lunch together. And then like 3 days later, it was all over.
It was insane. I mean, I think it might be right around this day.
Yeah.
Like a year to this day or something. It was crazy.
Yeah. And I remember kind of just giving you a hug, thinking, oh, maybe I shouldn't give the guy a hug, but I gave you a hug when you were leaving the diner. And so anyways, that memory gets replayed in my mind over and over again, because obviously I didn't go out to lunch with anybody for a long time. So anyways, I just wanted to throw that out there. We definitely need to reconnect in person at the Chit Chat Diner in West Orange, New Jersey real soon. And Renee, how have you been doing through this whole last year? You're keeping busy with stuff, obviously.
You know what? I work in music, so I've definitely been keeping busy. And, you know, we released our, you know, first song in 17 years. So that was definitely busy and, you know, kind of scary that, you know, you couldn't even play any shows around it. But, you know, it always helps that, you know, we got like a bunch of good reception on the first song and a lot of support from a lot of big friends.
Right on. And we will definitely talk about those guests that you have on the record. But let's talk about Reach NYC. So you said 17 years since this band has been out there doing it. Why is now 2020, I guess, would have been when you guys kind of reemerged, the time for Reach NYC to come back together, come back out? Is it the same lineup as before? Just fill us in maybe a little bit of the history of the band and why now?
Ahead, you know, man. What? Basically, you know, we started the band in 1996, right? Well, that's when I joined the band. And Richie Cipriano, he was the bass player in Sick of It All. And we had Dante Renzi on drums. And we had Danny Martinez on bass. And, you know, we played in New York City scene. We were like, you know, Richie came from the hardcore part of, like, you know, the music scene. And he was, like, definitely veering away from it, starting a rock band.
Right.
And so we actually didn't play with any of those bands. We maybe played a few hardcore shows, like maybe one or two, but like we always ended up like being the opening band for like System of Approach opened up, and we, you know, we play with just like Static X, like all those like new metal bands that were coming out that time. And I think basically after that, we finally got a record deal in 2001, right? And like a month before the record deal, Dante quit the band, right? So
right.
We literally played the next showcase and got a record deal. Jason Flom signed us to Lava Records. So that's like, you know, we put our record out in like 2001. So bad. I think two. No, definitely not one. It was like two or three, right? When the record came out. I think it was 2003. We did the record, with Jay Baumler on our NRG Studios in North Hollywood. And
okay.
My friend at the time, my Chester from Linkin Park, we had a plan. They were doing their second record, a Meteora. And we came up with a plan of, let's spend all summer together hanging out and being, you know, just completely stupid and having fun. So we like planned out, we recorded at the same time in the studio. And we did we finished our record, went on tour. You know, it was this thing like, you know, they pushed another band instead of us. We had an awesome time going around the country playing with like Evanescence and Papa Roach and Cypress Hill and the Hughes and Warped Tour and all this stuff. And just an awesome time. We didn't get really pushed by the label. They signed a band for four times more amount of money than us right after us called Smile Into Soul. And, you know, the writing was on the wall, basically, like, we were definitely getting dropped.
Right
before we got a record deal, I had gotten this band signed called Paris Flowers, and they turned into, you know, they changed the name to Maroon 5. So we're getting dropped. They're blowing up. My wife's pregnant. We decided to just, you know, you know, like just go our separate ways. I get an A&R job at Columbia Records from, you know, doing, you know, getting Maroon 5 the record deal. And, you know, that's how it just stopped that way. And then fast forward to 2017, now my close friend Chester, and mind you, like me and Nick have played in bands since we were like 17 years old.
17.
He's like one of the guys. I mean, the guy was like one of my closest and dearest friends. And we've been, you know, like it always felt right to have him in the band. So we played in a bunch of bands with the guys in Reach. Without the drummer that was signed, we had Dante back in the fold. So we played with a bunch of different lines, different names. It was basically Reach plus Nick. You know what I'm saying?
Got it.
So we did that for a few years. And then, you know, finally just like, you know, me and Nick always played. And, you know, we just like stopped playing. And I was full on working in music. I got a bunch of band signed. I'm doing like A&R and managing producers. And 2017 hits and my close friend, you know, passed away, committed suicide.
That's Chester Bennington.
Chester, yes. Yeah. He was one of my best friends. He committed suicide. I'm like pretty much like fucking devastated and in like a massive depression. Like 2019, I'm like still in a fucking depression. Like I am just fucking completely, you know, out of my, you know, like just so like monumentally depressed. And life was hard on, definitely hard on the soul. I was struggling. And then my buddies in POD were just like, dude, why don't you open a few shows for us, man? You need to just, and let me tell you, like the last night I ever spent with Chester, Nick came with me and we had this humongous dinner, right?
That replaced my mind too. It was so great.
It was like me, my buddy Matt Sorum from Guns N' Roses, Jacoby, Tobin, and Tony from Papa Roach, Marcus from POD.
Rob
Cash. Wow.
Rob Caggiano from Volbeat. Yeah, we had like Lorenzo Emilio's, right? We had this long ass table, right? And it was just the most incredible time.
Great. Is this in New York or LA? Where was this dinner?
It was on Houston at Emilio's.
Oh, all right, sure. Yep.
So we had like this amazing dinner, and Chester's like, I got an idea for a tour. Next year, I'm gonna do fucking humongous places. It's gonna be, I want Linkin Park, I want Korn, I want Limp Bizkit, I want Deftones, I want POD, I want Papa Roach, what's it called? I think somebody else. And then he goes, and I want Reach to get back together and open up the show. And I'm like, oh my God, are you fucking out of your mind?
Now, who said that to you? Who said that to you?
Chester.
So it was Chester's idea to really get Reach back together.
So, I mean,
wow.
Chris is like, yeah, that sounds cool. You should get your band back together. And I'm just like thinking like, I'm like, fuck that, man. I don't want, like, I'm cool. I don't need to, you know, try to conquer the world again. I'm like a 40-year-old man, you know what I'm saying? But anyways, fast forward, Marcus is like, you know what? You should really listen. It was like, you know, Chester always wanted to play. Why don't you fucking get your band back together? Open a few shows. So, you know, we hadn't played in so long. And me and Richie, Danny, and Nick got together in a rehearsal room in Yonkers. And we started playing. And it was like magic. Like, we never left. And you know what? Even more is like we were laughing our asses off, and it was just like so enjoyable that we were just like, let's just fucking have fun and play shows. You know what?
Hello, Renee? I think we lost him.
Shit.
Renee, you there? Can you hear us?
You know, conceived conception. We're just going up because we love each other, love playing music. And that's how we got back together. Right. And we started playing more shows and we're just killing it. And we're just like, let's go. And then my buddy Don, who sounded lovely the band, saw us play. He worked over at the Orchard and gave us an EP deal at the Orchard Sony.
And so that's where we're at. We got this EP coming out. And Renee, when does the EP actually drop?
I'm so bad at remembering days, but I think in May.
Yeah. Okay.
I thought it was April, but that's all right.
Oh, that's the next single is in April.
Okay.
Right on. So
There's two singles out now. Let's talk about the songs that are out. The very cool music video, actually. Let's talk about that. The song is Back from the Dead, a song that, I mean, it sounds like this whole thing was basically kind of inspired by Chester Bennington and his suggestion, which I didn't realize. But the lyrics, this specific song, is something you use kind of as a healing mechanism to deal with his death?
You know what? We had written the song a while ago, right? We had a demo version, and we actually even had Jacoby singing on it. We just didn't feel right. So we did, you know, Jacoby had this idea, like, why don't we start it with the chorus? So we did that and recorded a few more parts on it, did a little more production on it. But basically the song was about
rising up.
Basically it was like about being depressed and just like coming back from the dead and like being emotionally like dead and just, you know, coming up and coming back like a phoenix.
Right on.
From the ashes.
Yeah.
So it definitely took another turn when we revived it, and it definitely, you know, was there. It definitely felt like the spirit was in it for me, at least. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Jacoby is, you know, one of my, you know, closest, you know, I love that guy. He's my brother.
Jacoby from Papa Roach.
Really, you know, yeah, Jacoby Shaddix, and he just wanted to be on the song, and, you know, it just felt right. It all felt right and it felt in place.
Right on. And there's a great music video for the song Back from the Dead by Reach NYC. Yes. Definitely check that out. I love the sci-fi kind of tilt on it. Good stuff. Who works on that video with you? Was there a certain director?
You know what? So the director was this kid, Boy Epic, right? Just got him. He's an artist. He's a sick, like, alternative pop artist. Like, his stuff sounds like 21 Pilots. But I literally just got him a record deal with Lava Republic like 3 weeks ago.
Wow,
so he's indebted to do all of my videos for the rest of his life.
Right on.
Anyway,
right on.
So the first video, I basically told him, I want something that like basically feels like you're lost. Maybe like someone lost. I was like, you know, the feeling of being lost in life and trying to make it back home. So he did this whole thing. I told him I love the visual stuff and that movie Prometheus.
Yeah.
Like a precursor to like Alien. And all that,
yep,
shit.
I saw it. Yep. Yeah. Great movie.
And it just had, like, I loved the imagery they had up there. And it was kind of funny because at that dinner, they had like the whole cast of like, what's it called? Aliens Covenant were like sitting next to us.
Oh, right? Really? Well,
so it's like, yeah. Billy Crudup and like Zoe Kravitz. And the guy that was the guy with Prometheus, what's his name? He was like the young Magneto guy.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know who you're talking about. Okay, yeah.
Well, Michael Fassbender and Billy Crudup also had Sam Rockwell there. So all the guys are like, you know, we're at the table and we're like looking at them. And I'm friends with Billy Crudup and Sam Rockwell. I know him for a while. And I turn around and go, hey, what's up, guys? And they came over. I went over there and I gave him a hug. Hugs and we're just talking and that, and then Chester comes over and Michael Fassbender is like, "Oh, I love Linkin Park." It was just like all actors on one side. It was like,
yeah,
from Eastbound and Down, and it was a funny night. We were just like, "What the hell?" And then on top of that, they're like trying to like totally embarrass me by toasting my name like 15 times in a row. You know, like Sam Rockwell and I'm looking at him like, I don't know. They're just trying to embarrass me. It's pretty good.
Right on. Now, Nick, tell us about the other single that's out. It's Automatic and great tune. Let's talk about who's the special guest on that one.
Well, Mark Morton is, right, Mark?
Lamb of God, yeah.
Yeah, Renee. And
basically,
that's a lot of, you know, that he knew Mark Morton, and he did some work as well.
Basically, this, my producer that I managed, Josh Wilbur, he produces all Lamb of God records, right? And he was doing a Mark Morton solo record. And then, so they reached out to me to get guests. And I got Chester. It was the last song I ever recorded was for Mark Morton's solo record. I also got Jacoby to sing it too. So I got Chester and Jacoby to sing on. And then he was just like, man, I just want to like do something with you guys. So, you know, he played the solo on Automatic. And that's how that happened.
Very, very cool. And there's at least one other special guest on the record, right?
That song?
Just those two.
Paige Hamilton.
I totally forgot. Yeah, we got Paige Hamilton.
Oh yeah. Helmet. A long time. Yeah.
And what does he do? What is he? Is he doing? So he solo oh, or song, rhythm?
We have this song 6 years, right? And it was a song. We released a version on our record that we definitely weren't happy with, and so this is the version that we got a record deal from, and we just remastered it, and it has Paige on it. And basically, before Paige got Helmet back together, which actually I'm the one that totally orchestrated Helmet getting back together and doing that Size Matters record and getting me signed on Interscope. So he played on this demo, and we got a lot, played on this demo, and it was like a big deal back then. Everyone was like, Paige, left David Bowie's band, and like the next thing he does is playing a Reach demo. How did that happen? And it just got us a lot of buzz and all this stuff. So I go, I'm gonna help you put your back together. Introduce him actually to mix the Helmet record. So that's how that all happened.
Right on. And we are in our final few minutes here, but Nick, real quick, can you tell me about meeting Renee for the first time? When was the first time you met him? Do you remember the first time meeting him?
Oh man. I met him through his cousin a long time ago. And then I was in another band and actually, was kind of leaving that band. And then I think Marcos, his cousin, said something to Renee, and then he wanted to put some songs together or write some stuff. And we started doing that, and then we grew together with the New York scene. And that's basically, what happened. And
right.
then through years of, me going to Jersey and playing in all kinds of other outfits, once he called me up one day after I was done doing, some of the projects I was in Jersey. And he was like, hey man, you want to play? We need a second guitar player. We need someone to add a different element of songwriting, singing and playing and all that kind of stuff. So, I was like, sure, let's see what it's about, So then, I think we totally put some great stuff together from that.
Right on. Cool. And is there plans to play live yet, or is it still kind of too early for that?
Absolutely. I forgot our first show. September, they just moved it from July 20th to September 10th. And it's Incarnation Fest in Ohio. And I know, the year got canceled. It was, the bill was like, it was Weezer, Blink-182, Papa Roach, Limp Bizkit, and a bunch of bands. And I think it's probably going to be like a lot of the same bands too.
Awesome. So
that's our first show.
Sounds
back.
Like an incredible lineup.
I think we're going to be on a bunch of other festivals. We got a booking agent who's, been taking care of it. And he does like Volbeat and Metallica and all that stuff. So we've definitely been fortunate to, just be lucky to have people like want to work with us.
Right on. And where is the best place that people can get in touch with you guys online? Is there a website? Is it social media?
I would definitely say our Facebook page or our Instagram.
Okay, cool. And the two songs are up there on Apple Music, I see. And Nick, you're saying Spotify too, right? I assume.
Any of those streaming outlets, but like Spotify is just blowing up like crazy,
Cool. All right, guys. Thank you, man. I appreciate you doing this. And it will be posted. It could be another 2 weeks, but it'll we'll get it up as soon as we can.
All right, great.
Thank you so much, Mark.
All right, Renee, thank you. Nice meeting you, man.
We'll
take care, man. Nice meeting you.
Cool.
All right, guys, keep drinking the Dash Vodka. Dash Vodka is my favorite vodka. Ask for it at your local liquor store, and we will link that through the show notes. Dash Vodka is the drink to drink, for sure. You want a smooth taste. You want something that lots of care and handcrafted love go into when they make it. It's Dash. That's the vodka to drink. Dash Vodka. Thank you to everyone out there for
joining me on this episode of Talking Metal. Consider supporting me on Patreon. Victor Ruiz does now a new podcast. Not only do we have the weekly podcast that Victor and I do every week on Patreon, but now there's an additional podcast that is a bi-weekly show on Patreon hosted by Victor Ruiz, and it is called The Recap Show, where he recaps everything I've done on the podcast. It's a great listen, highly recommended, and that is included for the people who do $5 a month or more. They get to listen to that. But for as little as $2 a month or more, you get a bonus podcast every week by me, no matter what. It is, I mean, sure, there might be one week where I don't do it for some reason, but it's been like 80 episodes or something when we haven't missed a week yet. So there you go. All right, guys, take care. And a big thanks to everyone for hanging with me. Thanks to Reach NYC. We're going to do a makeup interview with Nick Cavanero. That sounds a little bit better than that because Renee, man, his connection was terrible. So if you listen to that, let me just say thank you. Okay. They're a great band. Check out their music and we'll talk later. All right. See you guys.